who remembers something from yesterday's class other than the discussion about who came first, the devotee or the Lord? Who is the dominant mercy? No, that wasn't a question. Does anyone remember something from yesterday's class other than that? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Condemns the realistic way of thinking, identifying the material body, which is known as king now, but will be known as ash or stool after dying, and even while being a king, will be subservient to his queen, and even if he is austere, will still strive only for controlling the material world.
Yes.
And then he speaks about how to change that.
Yes. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? That was the beginning of Mutsukunda's prayers. His prayers basically are divided into several parts. That's the first part, the condemnation. It was 7 or 8 verses condemning the materialistic way of life. Because one is stalked by the... What was the comparison given? What was death compared to? What was death? A snake licking its lips as it's holding a mouse. Oh, so graphic. So heavy, actually. We can laugh about it and think it's cute unless we're the mouse. Unless it's our time. And we know it's our time. And if we're not fixed, mrityum janmale hoy, that this is the test, ultimately. Unless we're fixed in our shelter and have developed firm faith in our shelter, and our shelter is a true shelter in Krishna, then terror will enter our heart. Bhajan kori, bhajan kori, mrityu janmale hoy. Sadhan kori, bhajan kori, mrityu janmale hoy. That's the test, so we can laugh at the foolish mouse in terror as long as the mouse is not us. So the prayers of Mutsukunda continue. And Krishna, he's so fortunate. And what his fortune, why did Krishna appear before him? And so interesting how Krishna accomplished his two tasks at once. He wanted to kill Kaliyavana, and at the same time he wanted to give his own association to Mutsukunda, who so strongly desired that association from previous births. So Krishna was standing right before him, and the scene was strikingly beautiful in the sense that the cave was dark, a proper place for sleeping, but entering into that dark came the all-effulgent Lord, who was so beautiful. Does anyone remember some of the features of the Lord's beauty?
He was four-armed.
Thank you. You only get one. What else? Brilliantly effulgent. Thank you. Anyone else? You can have another one now. Yes.
He is attractive, both man and woman.
He is attracted to everyone. He was wearing a Vaijayanti garland. Yes, that's the one I was thinking. He was affectionately smiling as he was standing in front of Mutsukunda and dispelling the darkness from what? The cave. And what was the cave? What is the Sanskrit word for cave or the cavern? Guha. And what does guha also mean? The heart. So this factually is the only way to remove the darkness of ignorance from the heart, is to somehow or another have Krishna shining in our heart. And this removes all suffering, because suffering is born of ignorance, because our constitutional position is blissful. So his prayers continue. So the turnaround comes by the association of exalted persons, Krishna Bhakti Janma Mula Hoya Sadhu Sanghi, because there is a transference that takes place, a transference of desire from the heart of the devotee into the heart of the conditioned soul. And it takes that. It takes that. A transference into desire, a transference of taste, even though it may be seed-like, but yet once it is planted in the heart, it is there forever. A different taste, a different desire. So then, the result of that is liberation and then bhakti. Freedom and then bhakti. Because bhakti actually takes place on the liberated platform. So then in text 54, Muchukunda continues, and this is almost the transition, verse 2, part of the other transition. My Lord, he says, this is 54, I think that you have shown me mercy. Since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Because if we try by our own efforts to become detached from this world, our position will always be precarious. Because the nature of a soul is to be attached to something. We need a shelter. We need an attachment. So Krishna's mercy was presenting himself, or an aspect of his mercy, was that he presented himself before Muchukunda. And a result of that was immediately there was no material attachment anymore. He was no longer attached to a kingdom. And a kingdom is so easy to get attached to because it means power, and power means enjoyment. That's why Ishwaraham, with power we control, and then aham bogi. And then the result of the ability to control is enjoyment. And that whatever we are enjoy, we become attached to. The cause of our pleasure causes us attachment. So if we, like Muchukunda, become confronted with Krishna in the cave of our heart, and certainly that will cause us the greatest pleasure and therefore the greatest attachment. So this was clearly, Muchukunda says, I think you have shown me mercy since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Such freedom, what freedom is he speaking about? Freedom from attachment is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude. So that is the purpose of the great kings of the past, who towards the end of their lives, or some of them even at the beginning of their lives, practically speaking. There was one king, a descendant of Dhruvaraj, very soon after Dhruvaraj departed, left for the forest. One of his sons, or one of the sons of his sons, was the Paramhamsa, and he just didn't want to take up the duties of being king. He just sort of refused, and he went into the forest. So most kings enter to the forest to gain relief from the anxiety caused by the attachments. Because Muchukunda said that, material life and material attachments simply mean anxiety, where our attempt is to enjoy, but the result is anxiety. So that which emperors enter the forest to achieve in their solitude, Muchukunda has achieved it just by being awakened by the Lord and being confronted with the effulgent presence of the Lord. So here is the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to text 54. Muchukunda said that I unexpectedly gave up attachment to my kingdom and other things after association with your devotees. is certainly your mercy. This is expressed in the verse of words of Vritrasura. O Indra, my master, the Lord, destroys all attempts at Dharma, Artha, and Kama, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. He destroys these for his devotees. All attempts. By that one can infer his mercy. Such mercy is only available to the selfless devotees of the Lord. In other words, the personal care of the Lord that pulls out all materialistic, selfish attempts from the core of the heart so that that bhakti can blossom there properly. Such mercy is available to the selfless devotees of the Lord. It cannot be obtained by those attached to the material energy. From Bhagavatam 6:11-23. Muchakunda prayed, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said. Saintly kings pray for the severing of attachments to family and kingdom. When it happens, they travel alone for the sake of achieving devotional service in the form of uninterrupted meditation upon you. And there, the Lord was standing right in front of Muchakunda. 55. And I'm probably going to have to move a little bit fast today because we spent a lot of time on that one verse yesterday discussing it. 55. Muchakunda continues. This is a response in the 43rd verse of this chapter. The Lord said to Muchakunda, please choose some benediction from me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. All of your desires. That's, again, I mentioned that's quite a frightening proposition because of different times of the day we desire different things. When we're hearing the Bhagavatam class, we're at our best, perhaps, or speaking Bhagavatam class. And why is Krishna going to do this? Because he's so inclined to his devotees. And then it's interesting, then he says, one who has satisfied me, this is in the 43rd verse, need never again lament. In other words, I'll give him whatever he wants. And lamentation comes from not achieving what one wants or being dissatisfied with what one has. So now he answers specifically that question, what do I want? I'll give you what I want. He says, O Vibhu, O powerful one, I desire no boon, no benediction, other than service to your lotus feet. The boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desires. So here in these verses, how strongly the case is being presented by Muchakunda and in his words, for being free from material desires, because that, and even as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained in the previous purport, the kings leave for the forest because they are detached, liberated. And what do there? They aspire for devotional service by placing you always in our hearts. So I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet, the boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desires, who are akinchana. O Hari, what enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, will choose a boon that causes his own bondage? You can give liberation, you can give bhakti. Why should I ask for something on the material level to please either my mind or senses materially, because that is going to entangle me and attach me more, still more, to this miserable material world which is certified as such by Krishna himself. Short one sentence, two sentence purport. The Lord offered Mutsukunda anything he desired, but Mutsukunda desired only the Lord. This is pure Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Comments. Here Mutsukunda replies to Krishna's offer to accept the benediction. Those who want nothing material, those who are a kinchana, pray for bhakti. They still want. And in fact, this is the key to both keeping free from material desires and also the key to developing love for Krishna. Tatraloyam abhimuyam ekalam. That the desire to be in Krishna's service has to burn brightly. And soon as there is a waning, a lessening of that brightness, then the witch of Maya will enter. For sure. There's an English saying, nature abhors a
vacuum.
In other words, when something is empty, it will not stay empty. So if we become slack in our Krishna conscious desires or empty in heart, Maya will enter quickly with filling up some other desire. So in that there is a word of caution to me. So here Mutsukunda replies to Krishna's offer to accept the benediction. Those who want nothing material pray for bhakti. But more worthy of prayer is prema. So that's very high. But yet he's saying, this is worthy. Let me love you. On that level of prema. And the most worthy of prayer is the service of your lotus feet. Thus I do not want liberation. So that is the result of prema, because prema, love, ends in service, because that's the happiness of the premi bhakta, is service. They want to give, not, oh, now I have prema and I will enjoy the happiness of prema. In Shantaras, it tends to be something like that. Satisfied, meditating on the beauty of the Lord's form. So therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami doesn't consider it a rasa, actual, because in the exchange of service is where is the highest. Thus, I do not want liberation, what to speak of any other boon. The phrase apavarga dham, Dham means the bestower of bhakti yoga. Since devotion is referred to by the term apavarga in the fifth canto, Mutsukunda said, what discriminating person would choose some ordinary material benediction leading to his own bondage, even if you are willing to grant it? I, however, am not interested even in liberation, so why would I choose such a thing? A second meaning, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, even one who worships you to get liberation, if he's intelligent, would he accept your boons which create bondage to the world again? What to speak then of your devotee, who he was including himself in the category of being a devotee. 56. Therefore, O Lord, and his prayers go up to 57. I'll read these two verses and then we'll read both purports. Therefore, O Lord, because this is what he wants, he explained what he doesn't want, he explained the horrors of material nature, he explained what causes a soul to change from being a materialist to a devotee, and then he explained what he doesn't want. Now, what does he want? Because the Lord has asked him. One name of the Lord is Varada, the giver of benedictions. 55. We already said it actually. O powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, full in pure knowledge and transcendental to the material modes. He wants something. He wants a shelter beyond the modes of material nature. The mind tends, the materialistic mind tends to take shelter of the three modes of material nature and its products. We become angry, we become happy, we become miserable, we become full of desire, we become, our consciousness fixes on one object or another object. These are all within the purview of the three modes of material nature. They are just, they are products of the material energy only. And the mind tends to take that shelter. But he wants the shelter of Krishna, and then he's defining that shelter, or Krishna, is beyond material desires, which are bound to passion, ignorance, and goodness. He's approaching you, the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter, who is not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth. There's nothing mundane or material or having to do with the three modes of material nature that cover you. You are not Brahman in the mode of goodness known as Ishwara, as the Mayavadis say. You are the Supreme Absolute Truth, full and pure knowledge and transcendental to the material world. We'll read again the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this. So he's directing, Mukshukunda is directing us where we should place our desires. And in the next chapter, in Rukmini's letter to Krishna, that Krishna willing we shall hear, her desires for service, and we'll see it brought to the highest degree, this desire. She wanted Krishna, she had Krishna prema, and she wanted service. And what was she? Oh, I'm going to start talking about that when I should be talking about this. So we'll get there, Krishna willing. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 56. Mukshukunda makes it clear in this verse that he himself has no desire for anything material. Mukshukunda said, I do not want any of the fruits connected with the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Fixed in that consciousness. And when we decide, I want to be a devotee, I only want you, Krishna, I don't want anything of the world of Maya, then either Maya or Krishna will put tests in front of us and say, let's see what you actually want. Let's see what you actually want. So therefore, as Kapila Muni explains in the third chapter, and also will come out here, the third canto, and also come out a little later, that bhakti yoga means cutting to the root. The root means to the point of false ego, the coverings and identities, other identities that we may have, and therefore he's cutting to the root. I don't want anything. I just want your surrender to you. I want you and your service. So he's speaking very much of surrender here. I do not want any of the fruits connected with the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. I reject even liberation, which is mixed up with the mode of goodness because it is based on knowledge. I pray only for the service of your lotus feet, which is transcendental to all the modes. It is said in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that devotional service is beyond the three modes. What verse? And Krishna replied to this saying, but some say that my form as a person is Brahman, covered by Maya. And Muchakunda in the verse, because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is explaining why Muchakunda is explaining, putting in these specific points in the way of Krishna putting forward questions. No, you are not, you are without any material coverings. You are Naranjanam and completely transcendental to the material modes. And Krishna says, yes, I may be without gunas, but some people say that my present body is made of the gunas. In other words, I may be a soul or unlimitedly Brahman, but my body is certainly covered by the gunas. That's what the Mayavadis say. And therefore they are called Mayavadis. They're the path of Maya. You and your body are not different, Muchakunda says. Rather, your body is you, Krishna. Then what is the real identity of my body? Muchakunda, it is made of pure knowledge. Chitsarup, gyapti matram. Another meaning. Because the world is made of your energy, it is not different from you. And in that sense, you are advayam. By your internal energy, Srup Shakti, you exist in a transcendental body of pure knowledge. Gyapti matram. He continues. He wants the shelter of Krishna. He wants the shelter of Krishna. And Krishna, out of his mercy, is giving it to him. It's interesting how Muchakunda was asleep. He had been asleep for a very long time. Even previously, he was desiring to be with Krishna. And Krishna came at some point due to his sincere and pure previous desires and awarded him what he wanted, which was his association, like the soul being asleep to his real identity. And then when awakened, what does the soul want when confronted with Krishna? He wants to serve even more than bhakti or prema bhakti. He wants to serve Krishna, make offerings of love to Krishna. So that's the developed stage of Krishna consciousness. Two more verses. For so long I have been pained by troubles in this world and have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies are never satiated and I can find no peace. So this is the position of a conditioned soul. So much suffering. But what does he do? That is the distinction between a devotee and a conditioned soul. So the devotee, Muchakunda says, therefore, O giver of shelter, O supreme soul, please protect me. Gotapte varanam tutahi places himself under Krishna's protection. I am yours and you are mine. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have by good fortune approached your lotus feet, which are the truth, and thus which make one fearless and free from sorrow. So everything, because the material world, and in this point I would, oh, did I skip a verse? Did I skip? No. So this is the last verse. So I'll read this again. Remember who is speaking. Who is speaking? Muchakunda. And who is Muchakunda? He's the king, but not only is the king, he's a devotee, but he was such a powerful king and warrior that the demigods had insisted that he fight on their behalf to protect them. And demigods are so powerful, but they needed Muchakunda, this incredible, and they wouldn't let him go, and therefore he was so tired. They needed him until Skanda Karakeya was born. So he was so powerful and had conquered. But keep that in mind when we hear his prayers And his explanation of what the material world is, it's a place that's full of fear and lamentation, and he can't find peace. Because what's the purpose of gaining money and strength and position? It's to gain power so that one can control one's destiny and one's environment, so that one can finally get some peace and happiness, which is always a little bit later coming. And what is this most powerful warrior saying? My six enemies are never satiated. I can't defeat my enemies. And of course, we'll hear what those enemies are. The senses and the mind, basically. I can't defeat those enemies, and therefore I lament continuously. I am not only lamenting, I'm burning with lamentation. And therefore, what the powerful warrior is saying is, give me shelter, O Supreme Soul. Please protect me. Please protect me. I am the one who needs protection. People come to me for protection, but I'm the one who needs protection. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have by good fortune approached your lotus feet, which are the truth, which are real, which are eternal. And thus, what is the result of taking shelter of his lotus feet? Thus make one fearless, and free from sorrow, free from lamentation, free from the ignorance that inhabits the heart. Because this is the natural position of everyone. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Go ahead and enjoy sense gratification. And when that is finished, I will personally give you the service of my feet. Now that sounds like a deal we can't refuse, doesn't it? Enjoy, you'll have everything. 1 foot here and 1 foot here. But it's not so appealing to Muchakunda. Why? Fearing such enticement, it's attractive. Fearing this type of enticement from Krishna, Muchakunda clasps the Lord's feet and offers this prayer. I have been pained by such disturbances as the eagerness of inimical opponents who want to defeat me in battle. Hari, Hari, I am burning with repentance. For all this time, I have not worshipped you. He is really locked and fixed in his actual position of being Krishna's servant. And therefore, he's experiencing everything else as a tremendous waste of time and energy and causing misery. I have not worshipped you for all this time. There's a saying that every thought devoid of Krishna is a wasted thought. There is no cessation of the desire for enjoyment of the six senses of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, skin, and mind. Neither do I find any peace by my own intelligence, nor by the knowledge given by others. If sense gratification is given to me, even if you give it to me, I will again become entangled like this. Because that is the nature of material enjoyment. Therefore, do not give me that enjoyment. So sincere. It takes this kind of sincerity, and therefore the Bhagavatam is explaining it. O Supersoul, who resides in everyone and therefore knows everything, I've taken shelter of your lotus feet. The fear of enemies and disease come along with winning the treasures of the earth. The treasures of heaven include impermanence, and the treasure of merging in Brahman cheats one of the service of your lotus feet. The treasure of your feet, however, awards fearlessness, freedom from lamentation, and eternal life in your loving service. Therefore, please protect me, who am afflicted with calamity, and keep me sheltered at your lotus feet. How wonderful. How wonderful. Now, how is Krishna going to reply to this? Text 58. The Supreme Lord said, O Emperor, great ruler, your mind is pure and potent. He's acknowledging the correctness, powerfulness, and correctness, purity of Muchakunda's discrimination and his mind. Mind means ichadvesha, acceptance, rejection. I want, I don't want. So he doesn't want properly and he wants properly. Your mind is pure and potent, and one needs a powerful mind to be fixed like this. One can't have a floaty, whimsical mind. Although I enticed you, what does enticed mean? Tempted, exact. Though I enticed you with benedictions, you can have anything you want. Your mind was not overcome by material desires. Understand that I enticed you with benedictions just to prove that you would not be deceived. The intelligence of my unalloyed devotees is never diverted by material blessings. The minds of non-devotees who engage in such practices as pranayama are not fully cleansed of material desires. The purpose of pranayama is pratyahara, the withdrawal of the mind from the objects of the senses. And yet, the position of such a person, even if he is expert, is so precarious because his false ego has not been fully dissolved and he's still thinking himself as the center. He hasn't fixed himself as a servant of Krishna. So therefore, precarious. So they are not fully cleansed of material desires. Thus, O King, material desires again seem to arise in their minds. So that was 1, 2, 3 verses. We'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on 58 and 59. Very short. Krishna said, your intelligence is strong. It is not moving here and there. Intelligence means the consciousness, the citta, the mind also. It is not flickering. Now I want this, and now I want that, and now I don't want that on the material level, spiritual level. Not moving here and there. 59. Krishna says, know that offering you benedictions, I'm showing other worshippers how you will not be bewildered by such things. Or another meaning is, you will not be distracted because the intelligence of my devotee is never attracted to material enjoyment. And then the verse about the those performing pranayama. Now 61, Krishna continues. Now here's his instruction to Muchakunda. And his final instruction, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, and it's quite funny what he tells him. Wander this earth at will. In other words, you go where you want. With your mind fixed on me, may you always possess such unfailing devotion for me. It's a blessing. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna said, I have already given you pure bhakti, but today I'm giving it to you again. Because you followed the principles of a kshatriya, you killed living beings while hunting and performing other duties. You must vanquish the sins thus incurred by carefully executing penances while remaining surrendered to me. Mutsukunda, this is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Mutsukunda thought, because he told them to wander the earth. Mutsukunda thought, alas, alas, Krishna wants to separate me from his association from now on. This can't be. It just can't be. Noticing Mutsukunda's great anxiety, Krishna then thought as follows. In this incarnation, he should not associate with me directly. All the personal assistants in my pastimes have taken birth in Dwapara Yuga, such as Uddhava, Kura, Arjuna, Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira. Mutsukunda, however, is extremely old, having taken birth at the very beginning of this Manvantara. And when people see him, they will laugh and say, "Aha, who is this very tall and stout man who was such a poor match for the Lord, because he was huge?" And even now, during the pastime of fleeing from Jarasandha, as well as in later pastimes, such as the kidnapping of Rukmini, it will not be at all fitting for this person to be associated with me while I'm fighting the likes of Salva and others. He will take these opponents of mine and crush them in his hand like they were mosquitoes. What excuse can I make up, therefore, to separate him from my association? After thinking like this, Krishna decided that the only means to accomplish this would be to speak some false words in order to mislead Mutsukunda. Thus he spoke this verse. So what was the verse again? You killed many animals while you were a kshatriya. Many living beings while hunting and performing other duties. You must vanquish the sins thus incurred by carefully executing penances while remaining surrendered to me. So there is falsity. Krishna speaks something that isn't philosophically consistent with the position of a devotee, because why? Sarvadamam pityaja mamekam sharanam bhaja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mochayishyami masucha, don't worry about it. So therefore, how Krishna is thinking, how am I going to this big fellow, he won't, because he's a kshatriya too, he's my devotee, if he sees someone attacking me like Sisupal, he won't be able to control himself. He'll just squeeze him and crush him like a mosquito in the hand. So to Tom, it's a very, very wonderful explanation. And then Krishna concludes, because the question, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, then asks the question, then Mutsukunda replies, then when will I have the opportunity to associate with you? And then the final verse in this chapter, O King, in your very next life, you become an excellent Brahmana, the greatest well-wisher of all creatures, and certainly come to me alone. So to that question, when will I become your associate? Krishna answers in this verse, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, after leaving this body, you will go to my abode in Vaikuntha. I give liberation and also residence in Vaikuntha, even to my enemies in this incarnation. So what then to speak of an exalted devotee like you? In my pastimes in a future incarnation, Janmanyantare, you will associate with me and as an essential participant. You will join my lila, but now you'll go to Vaikuntha. In your very next birth, you will be the best friend of all living entities. And at that time, you and I will act for their benefit by giving them transcendental knowledge as suits the circumstances. Becoming a universally respected and learned Brahmana, you will attain me alone due to your lack of possessiveness and mood of renunciation. In other words, you will remain in my association. Chapter 52, because we have to move on. Sukadev Goswami said, my dear king, thus graced by Lord Krishna, Mutsukunda circumambulated him and bowed down to him. Then Mutsukunda, the beloved descendant of Ichaku, exited through the mouth of the cave, of the cave. Mm-hmm. Seeing the size of all the human beings, animals, trees and plants was severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Mukshakunda left for the north. Purport. There are several significant words in this verse. A standard Sanskrit dictionary gives the following English meaning for the word chulaka, meaning describing all the living entities in Kali Yuga. Little, small, low, vile. What does vile mean? Huh? Yeah, it's, huh? Yes, yeah, something. What's the dictionary? Give a vile? This is vile living entities in Kali Yuga. Yes, like that. Poor, indigent, lazy, wicked, malicious, abandoned, hard, pained, and last but not least, distressed. These are the symptoms of the age of Kali, and all these qualities are said here to apply to men, animals, plants, and trees in this age. We who are enamored of ourselves and our environment can perhaps imagine the superior beauty and living conditions available to people in former ages. The last line of this text, Jagama Disham Uttaram, he went towards the north, can be understood as follows. By traveling north in India, one comes to the world's highest mountains, the Himalayan range. There one can still find many beautiful peaks and valleys, where there are quiet hermitages suitable for austerities and meditation. Thus in Vedic culture, going to the north indicates renouncing the comforts of ordinary society and going to the Himalayan mountains to practice serious austerities for spiritual advancement. So he left for the north. The sober king, text 3, beyond material association and free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Gandhamadana mountain. Purport. The name Gandhamadana indicates a place of delightful fragrance, Gandha. Undoubtedly, Gandhamadana was filled with the aroma of wild flowers and forest honey with other natural scents. When he arrived, there he arrived at Badrikashram, the abode of Lord Narayan. We're remaining tolerant of all dualities. What dualities does one have to be tolerant of in Badrikashram, especially? Yes, oh, especially of cold. You don't have to be so tolerant of heat there. And he worshipped the Supreme Lord by performing severe austerities. He peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord. Sarva dvanva saha shantas tapas saradayad dharim. He worshipped Hari. He worshipped Hari peacefully, tapasa, with severe austerities. Saha tolerated all dvanva duality, sarva all. So he went there. Then, remember how Mukshakunda and Krishna met in that cave. How? How did they meet in the cave? Krishna had ran from? He ran from Kaliyuga, but what place did he run from?
From Mathura.
From Mathura. So he went back to Mathura. But it wasn't going to be a peaceful return to Mathura, because he had... what did Krishna do just prior to this? He went to Dwarka because Jarasandha was coming with so many divisions of soldiers. So the Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables back to Dwarka. He eliminated the entire army of Kaliyavana. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of 23 armies. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, the two Madhavas, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless, but feigning, making believe he was full of fear, they went many yojanas on their lotus-like feet. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a comment here. This verse describes the nature of their assuming the behavior of humans, what they did as a human would do. But this is not the ultimate siddhanta, the conclusion of Krishna Balaram's fleeing, that they were acting as humans acted. Even though they exhibited human behavior, in many instances, they exhibit their omniscience, their all-knowingness and omnipotence, their all-power also. Neither can the explanation be given that this was some immature display due to prema, just like with Mother Yasoda, Krishna acts in prema and actually becomes fearful of her chastisement. Because this can't be the reason why Krishna acted. So Krishna didn't truly get fearful because he is also omnipotent and all-powerful. And also it wasn't due to prema that he acted in this way because, Vishwanath says, there were no devotees present there. There were no loving devotees present there. Nor can it be explained that Krishna and Balaram were simply pretending to be afraid. So they were neither afraid, pretending to be afraid, or controlled by their devotees' love. Sri Uddhav describes the inconceivable nature of Sri Krishna in the Bhagavatam 3.4.16. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do, he nevertheless acts, although he is always unborn. He nevertheless takes birth, although he is time, fearful to everyone. He flees Mathura in fear of his enemy to take shelter in a fort. And although he is self-sufficient, he marries 16,000 women. Although situated in fearlessness, abhito, Krishna Balaram decided to show fear by acting like fearful persons. This expresses a contradiction, Krishna says. And this is Krishna's inconceivable behavior. He is swatantra. He is independent. He acts as he likes. Why? For his own purposes. Because he wants to, basically. So Krishna had something wonderful to do, actually, at this time that will be revealed very soon. So he abandoned the riches. So that means that he was gathering all the riches and the wealth that they had taken, that they were plundering from the army of Kaliyavana, because they had all been killed. And then he was taking that as if this was the spoil of war, the result of a successful battle. You gained so much on the material level. But then, when Jarasandha attacked, he left it all behind. Because Krishna doesn't care for anything. And this is just part of his pastimes. And he fled with Balaram. When he saw them fleeing, Jarasandha, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly. But there is also a saying in English, he who laughs last laughs longest or loudest or best. I've heard it in all ways. So ultimately, Jarasandha isn't going to have the last laugh. Although he's going to laugh when they beg to fight with him, when Krishna, Bhima and Arjuna beg a fight with him, he's going to laugh again. He said, I won't fight with you, Krishna. You ran away. You're a coward in both ways. You ran away from the battle. I won't fight with someone like that. He had forgotten that Krishna had defeated him 17 times before, somehow or another. And this, of course, is the nature of pride. Because if one thinks about it, I do something good and then suddenly I become very proud and suddenly I also at the same time forget all the terrible things I've done. Those things vanish. So this is the nature of false ego. So Jarasandha laughed loudly and then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted position of the two lords. Apparently exhausted from fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named Pravarshana, upon which Lord Indra showered incessant rain. So in other words, it had clouds on the top of the mountain. Does anyone know where this mountain is situated? Is it known where this Pravarshana mountain is? Varshana means rain, yes? Does anyone know which mountain it's where it is? Okay. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountain, Jarasandha could not find a trace of them. Therefore, O king, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. Purport. Clearly we are observing one of the Supreme Lord's transcendental pastimes. Although the Bhagavatam states that the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, were exhausted, even in their so-called exhausted state, they were able to quickly climb a high mountain and shortly thereafter jump off it to the ground. It would be unwise and illogical to ignore the whole picture the sages are giving us here and instead try to pick apart isolated descriptions, in other words, saying that just they were afraid or exhausted, therefore that Krishna can't be the Supreme Lord. Clearly we are watching the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the midst of his spiritual pastimes. We are not observing an ordinary human being. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were still quite young men when this pastime took place, and one can easily see in these descriptions how they must have been enjoying themselves, eagerly fleeing from the somewhat ridiculous King Jarasandha, somewhat ridiculous because he had forgotten that he had been defeated so many times before, and racing up a mountain, jumping off and totally befuddling the constantly failing demon who somehow or another never lost confidence in himself. Seeing without envy or quarrelsomeness, the Lord's pastimes are immensely entertaining. 12. The two of them. So the mountain that Krishna and Balaram had climbed up was set ablaze by Jarasandha. And the two of them, Krishna and Balaram, then suddenly jumped from the burning mountain, which was 11 yojanas high, that means 90 miles, and fell to the ground. So it was an extremely high mountain. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a brief comment. Krishna and Balaram jumped off a mountain which was 11 yojanas, 88 miles high, and landed at a distant place beyond the location of Jarasandha's troops. Unseen by their opponents or his followers, O king, these two most exalted Yadus returned to their city of Dwarka, which had the ocean as a protective moat. And Jarasandha, so why did they return to Dwarka? Because another pastime was awaiting Krishna. And that was Krishna's wishing. He had to receive the message that Rukmini was sending him to Dwarka. Just imagine, Rukmini is going to send this message, and just imagine if Krishna wasn't there in Dwarka, and then the next day the wedding was supposed to take place. It would have been a disaster. So of course Krishna does many things with one axe. So he didn't fight with Jarasandha. He climbed the mountain, and he went back to Dwarka with Balaram. So unseen by their opponents or his followers, O king, these two most exalted Yadus returned to their city of Dwarka, which had the ocean as a protective moat. Jarasandha, moreover, mistakenly thought that Balaram and Keshava had burned to death in the fire, and therefore later, when Krishna and Balaram come to see Jarasandha to beg, or Krishna comes to beg, that's one reason he doesn't recognize Krishna, is because he thinks that he's dead. Thus he withdrew his vast military force and returned to the Magadha kingdom. As ordered by Lord Brahma, Raivata, the opulent ruler of Anarta. Anarta is where? What province is Anarta?
It's Gujarat.
Yeah, in Gujarat.
Where?
Gujarat. He gave Lord Balaram his daughter Raivati in a marriage. This has already been discussed in 9th canto, or 9th canto, third chapter, 33 to 36,
and the delineation of the of who marries who is given.
And now here. So Balaram's been married, and because Krishna, the younger brother, can't get married without Balaram, the older brother, getting married first. Excuse me, not that Krishna appears at the marriage ceremony of Rukmini long before Jarasandha gets killed, actually. O hero amongst the Kurus, the Supreme Lord himself, Govinda, married Bhishmaka's daughter, Vidarbi, who was a direct expansion of the goddess of fortune. The Lord did this by her desire, and in the process he beat down Salva and other kings who took Shishupal's side. Indeed, as everyone watched, Sri Krishna took Rukmini as Garuda boldly stole nectar from the demigods. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami gives the following profound comment on these two verses, 16 and 17. The word Sri Om Matram indicates that beautiful Rukmini is a direct expansion of the eternal goddess of fortune. Therefore, she is worthy to be the bride of the supreme of the personality of Godhead. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Sri Akanta Kanta Parama Purusha. In the spiritual world, all the female lovers are goddesses of fortune, and the male lover is the Supreme Personality. Thus, Srila Jiva Goswami explains, Srimati Rukmini Devi is a plenary portion of Srimati Radharani. The Kartika Mahatmya section of the Padma Purana states, Kaishori Gopakanyasta Yovane Raja Kanyaka. In childhood, Sri Krishna enjoyed with the daughters of cowherd men, and in his adolescence, he enjoyed with the daughters of kings. Similarly, in the Skanda Purana, we find the statement, Rukmini Dwaravatyam Tu Radha Vrindavane Vane. Rukmini is in Dwarka what Radha is in the forest of Vrindavan. The term Swayamvare here means by one's own choice. Although the word often refers to a formal Vedic ceremony in which an aristocratic girl may select her own husband, here it indicates the informal and indeed unprecedented events surrounding Krishna's marriage to Rukmini. In fact, Sri Krishna and Srimati Rukmini chose each other because of their eternal transcendental love. So Sukadeva Goswami has explained the whole pastime of Krishna's marriage to Rukmini in brief. And King Prakrit Maharaj, in those two verses, and Prakrit Maharaj responded by saying, the Supreme Lord married Rukmini, the beautiful faced daughter of Bhishmaka, in the Rakshasa style, or so I have heard. Rakshasa style, it means the taking of the girl by force away from the rivals. 19. My Lord, I wish to hear how the immeasurably powerful Lord Krishna took away his bride while defeating such kings as Magadha, that's Jarasandha, and Salva. And here we'll read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to text 19. I have heard about this in general terms, the way you described it, now I want to hear it in specific detail. He was very eager to hear more. What experienced listener, O Brahman, so he's going to describe the glories of Krishna Katha, could ever grow satiated, full, and not wanting any more, while listening to the pious, charming, and ever-fresh topics of Lord Krishna, which cleanse away the world's contamination. So that's what Maharaj Prakrit says. And Sridhar Swami comments. Prakrit Maharaj reveals his eagerness to hear in the verse beginning Brahman. Punya means giving the most valuable fruit, and Madhavi means pleasing to hear. Shruta Sukha. They also take away the contamination. Krishna Katha also takes away the contamination of the whole world. Srinvana means the same as Srinvan. And Shrutajana means one who understands the essential meaning of what he hears. Shruta Sharavit. Nitya Nanu Nutana means being experienced as amazing at each and every moment, ever fresh. So he's describing the glories of Krishna Katha in this way. So this is how he's experiencing it. We may not quite be on that level, and some of us may even get tired. But this is if one actually catches the essence, if there is a direct communication, not stopped by either the speaker's consciousness or the consciousness of the hearer, if there is a direct infusion or communication of the transcendental syllables of Bhagavatam right into the heart through the ear, out the mouth and through the ear into the heart, then everything is ever fresh and completely captivating and wonderful, and one experiences Krishna directly in the Krishna Katha. And it not only that, it removes, just the sound vibration removes the contamination of the world. So, Sukadeva Goswami, Sri Badarayani said, there was a king, so he's going to narrate this pastime. There was a king named Bhishmaka, the powerful ruler of Vidarbha. He had 5 sons and 1 daughter of lovely countenance. She was beautiful. Rukmi was the firstborn son, followed by Rukmaratta, Rukmabahu, Rukmakesh, and Rukmamali. Their sister was the exalted Rukmini, who was the goddess of fortune herself. Hearing of the beauty, prowess, transcendental character, and opulence of Mukunda from visitors to the palace who sang his praise, Rukmini decided that he, Mukunda, Krishna, Lord Hari, would be the perfect husband for her. Lord Krishna knew that Rukmini's possessed intelligence, auspicious bodily markings, beauty, proper behavior, and all other good qualities. Concluding that she would be an ideal wife for him, he made up his mind to marry her. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, short comment. Suitable because she comprised his internal potency. She was his internal potency. Thus he made up his mind, Krishna made up his mind. Or else she was suitable because of her being none different from Radharani and the other gopis in intelligence, bodily markings, and so on, and complete devotion. And when we hear Rukmini's letter, we'll see that her mood so closely resembles the mood of the gopis of Srimati Radharani. If I can't have you, O Lord, it is okay, because I know I'm unworthy, because you are so wonderful in every way. And if I cannot have you, O Lord, I shall give up my life performing austerities, my subtle body always focused on you. It may take some time, several births, but gradually I pray that you will be merciful and accept me. So focused in love. And this, when we hear about Rukmini, this is the fulfillment of love, of the acting in prema and acting in prema bhakti, loving service that was spoken of, which is the proper thing Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said to pray for. Because Rukmi envied the Lord, and later on he's going to have to pay for it. How? Huh? Yeah, but and after that,
Balaram is going to get so angry at him because he tries to teach Balaram, and Balaram is just going to lose his temper and smash him over the head with his club and kill him.
Because he was such a cheater. So because Rukmi envied the Lord, O King, he forbade his family members to give his sister to Krishna, although they wanted to. So Krishna wanted her to be his wife, and she wanted Krishna, had accepted in her heart. And how did she fall in such deep love of Krishna? By hearing about him. So this is quite wonderful. Hearing about the prowess, the beauty, transcendental character and opulence of Mukunda from visitors. So we are visitors to the Bhagavatam, so to speak, and we're hearing the different reciters, different great devotees describe these very things about Krishna. And this is what we are meant to do. We are meant to fall in love with Krishna. So Rukmi instead decided to give Rukmini to Shishupala. Dak-eyed Vaidarbhi, that means Rukmini, was aware of this plan and it deeply upset her. Analyzing the situation, she quickly sent a trustworthy brahmana to Krishna. So what would have been an alternative? She could have just simply lamented. But what is the use of lamentation? She said, I should act. She was strong and knew what she wanted, knew what she didn't want, and then acted appropriately, intelligently, and immediately to do exactly the right thing that was going to get her what she wanted, which was the loving service of Krishna. 27. So she sent who? Who did she send? A Brahmin. Why? Because what? He was faithful, trustworthy. He was honest, trustworthy. Why is a Brahmin honest and trustworthy? Because in the mode of goodness, he's not greedy, he's not untrustworthy. It's one of the qualities of a Brahmana. And upon reaching Dwarka, the Brahmana was brought inside by the gatekeepers, and he saw the primeval, original personality of Godhead, sitting on a golden throne. And seeing the Brahmana, Sri Krishna, Lord of the Brahmanas, came down from his throne and seated him, although he is the Lord of the Brahmanas. He put the Brahmana on the golden throne because the Brahmanas, Krishna is acting on the Varnashrama level as a Kshatriya, even though he's the Supreme Lord. He wants the world to know how important this Varnashrama system is. So in Prabhupada's words, so society will have a head, it will have intelligence, it will have direction. Instead of now it goes in its directionless way and the result is catastrophic. So he seated the Brahman on the golden throne and he worshipped him just as he himself is worshipped by the demigods. And after the Brahman had eaten and rested, Sri Krishna, the goal of saintly devotees, came forward and while massaging the Brahman's feet with his own hands, he patiently questioned him as follows. So in 6 verses, we'll hear the words of Krishna and then we shall stop. And then the Brahman will hand over his message and in the next class, we shall hear the message that Rukmini had sent to Krishna. So this is what the Supreme Lord, in the midst of this wonderful pastime, what he's going to say to the Brahman. O best of exalted Brahmanas, are your religious practices sanctioned by senior authorities proceeding without great difficulty? Is your mind always fully satisfied? So here he's hinting at what is the nature of a qualified Brahman. When a Brahman is satisfied with whatever comes his way, and does not fall away from his religious duties, those very religious principles become his desire cow, fulfilling all his wishes. I'll read that again, it's so nice. When a Brahman is satisfied with whatever comes his way, and he does not fall away from his religious duties, those very religious duties that he's performing, religious principles become his desire cow. They fulfill all his wishes.
An unsatisfied Brahmana, on the other hand, wanders restlessly from one planet to another, even if he becomes king of heaven. But a satisfied Brahmana, though he may possess nothing, rests peacefully, all his limbs free of distress. I respectfully bow my head in respect to those Brahmanas who are satisfied with their lot in life, with their fate, with what they have. Saintly, prideless, and peaceful, they are the best well wishers of all living beings. Because if one is not satisfied with what one has, one will not be well wisher of everyone. Rather, one will have friends and enemies, and one will have envy towards those who have the things that he wants. So, and can't well wish them well. O Brahmana, is your king attending to your welfare? Indeed, that king in whose country the citizens are happy and protected is very dear to me. Whence have you come? Whence means where or when? Where? From where? Okay. From where? Whence have you come? Crossing the impassable sea. And for what purpose? Because that Dwarka was situated on, surrounded by the moat of the sea. Explain all this to us if it is not a secret, and tell us what we may do for you. How can we serve you? Thus questioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who incarnates to perform his pastimes, the Brahmin told him everything about what the purpose of his visit. Read a short comment by Srila Srila Swami. Thus, asked fully all the items of inquiry by the Supreme Controller, he related everything, the intentions of the family members and what Rukmini was attempting to do, and so on. So now, in the next seven verses, we will hear the message of Princess Rukmini to Krishna. And it is very bold. Okay, so let us stop now and come back at 1:25. So we have 1.5 hour plus 3 extra bonus minutes because I rushed through so quickly. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Rukmini Devi ki jai, the honest, trustworthy Brahmana ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai. Sisupal. Yeah. Well wisher of everyone.